Welcome to the Gay Buddhist Forum, where teachers from all schools of Buddhism offer their perspectives on the Dharma and its application in modern times, especially for LGBTQI audiences. These talks are offered freely to the world and made possible by appreciative listeners. If you would like to support our efforts to share the Dharma with underserved audiences, please visit gaybuddhist.org. There you can donate, find a list of upcoming speakers, or enjoy many hundreds of these recorded talks dating back to 1996.
Welcome back. It's our custom at this point to go around and have everyone introduce themselves. I'm Marvin Snow.
I'm Mark Tilly.
I'm Bill.
Steven.
Andre. Anthony.
Joe.
Max.
George.
Robert.
Michael.
Justin.
Will.
Howard. Ford.
They are.
David.
Keith. Mark.
Peter.
Norman.
Larry Wish.
Jack.
Will.
Peter.
Rule.
Richard.
Richard.
Jerry.
Jim.
Harv.
Carl. Clint Sider.
Anyone here for the first time or returning after a long absence? Welcome. Your name again?
Me.
Anyone else? Yes.
Will.
Will. Welcome, Will. After the talk, we'll have about a half hour of social time in the outer room there. All the long-standing members will welcome you and answer any questions you have. Welcome. Today's speaker, we actually have two, and it only looks like our traditional Dharma duos that we have there. It's a slightly different program. We have Clint Sider and Carl Wolf here for a discussion on Gay Sangha. Both Clint and Carl are long-term GBF Sangha members, and they're going to share their thoughts about the meaning and role of Gay Sangha in their lives, and then there'll be a discussion regarding that subject. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Carl.
Hi. I'm going to start and Carl will take over. Basically, I'm just going to say a few things and hand it over to Carl, then we'll have a general discussion about the subject. It's a huge subject. For me, and I'm sure for other people in this room too, both Sangha in general and also GBF Sangha right here, what it is all about, what it gives, where it's going. I've been a member of GBF since it first began, about, was it 15 or 16 years ago, maybe around. And no big surprise to hear that it was very different back then. It was basically just a small band of gay men who were also practicing Buddhists who felt that the sanghas that they were participating in didn't really answer all their issues or meet all their needs, and they felt that it was a good time to start a sangha exclusively for gay men. And, it was just a handful of people. Originally, we would have, maybe a dozen people would show up, give or take. And we met on the Zen Hospice, the first floor over on Page Street, every other week. And, we were playing it by ear. It was just basically, we were just trying to explore just what shape the song would be in, what would the issues be, how would it be organized, all the nuts and bolts behind that, plus just the nature of what the Sangha itself would be. It was a gay Buddhist fraternity back then, but it was a little too Joe College, so it eventually became Gay Buddhist Fellowship, so we could keep that F. And, in trying to see what kind of Sangha we wanted, there were differing opinions about that, and a lot of times we resolve those amicably, and a lot of times we butt heads together in order to try to define what GBF would be. And you see GBF now, and this is not just something that happened naturally. This has been a evolution over many years to where it is now. And it's great to see how successful this Sangha has been after going on how many years, 15 or 16 years, to see it still not only thriving, but thriving a lot more than it was in the past, and with all sorts of promise to it about the future. It'd be interesting to see what it's going to be 15 or 16 years from now, actually. It might be like Glide Memorial Church. You can dream, at least. A few years ago, Winston Leyland, who was the owner and publisher of Gay Sunshine, put out a book called Queer Dharma. And it achieved, it was just a collection of essays from gay men who were also practicing Buddhists. And it achieved a certain amount of success, and so he came out with a sequel, which was Queer Dharma 2, right here. And Winston asked a number of gay men who were practicing Buddhists to contribute articles, and he asked me to do that too. So back then, I was thinking about what to write about, and again, Sangha has always been a huge issue for me, so I wrote an article called Finding Sangha, a Gay Perspective. And I just want to read a couple of very short passages from this, kind of set the theme. You know, the first passage just deals with being an urban gay male. We live in a country whose culture prides itself on its individuality. We belong to the gender that favors competitiveness over relationship. Most of us are transplanted from other parts of the country, with our biological families left behind, and we are members of a minority that is marginalized at best and despised at worst. And the point I'm trying to make in that is, I don't think Sangha happens naturally. I think actually we have to fight a lot of forces that try to isolate and alienate us in order for Sangha to happen. It's a bit like swimming upstream. And as far as the issue of gay Sangha itself, I just have another short passage where I try to explore that a little bit. What I'm talking about is essentially a spiritual journey as represented through Sangha. Like all spiritual journeys, this would involve the heavy questions. How can we as gay men find meaning and purpose in life? How can we connect and love with others? How can we feel whole and integrated within ourselves? How can we move away from pettiness and negativity and shame and into a greater intimacy with everything around us? So I just want to explore that, and I'm almost done talking. Not only explore the idea of gay Sangha in the sense that this is a very spiritually rich area we live in. It's one of the power centers of the world, the Bay Area, as far as spiritual traditions, and there are all sorts of Sanghas out there. Why do we feel necessary to have a gay men Sangha, both the gay part and the men's part? And then also the issue about gay Sangha. This also happens to be a very gay-friendly area with lots of gay organizations and groups all striving in their own ways to create community. Why do we feel, what does a gay Sangha have to offer? What does a spiritual community have to offer that's something that's not already being offered in any of these other communities that are out there? So we're going to explore that, you know, maybe throw some question topics out, and I hope we get people engaged in this where they can go ahead and make their own contributions. And with that, I'll turn things over to Carl.
Thanks, Clint.
Thank you.
Well, Clint and I met last Saturday, last Sunday, after we met here, just to go over what this whole topic is all about. And basically, we realized that it raises questions, is what it does. Lots of questions. And maybe that's the paradox of the spiritual life as well, that it raises questions that we must sit with for long periods of time, and maybe there's no answers, or maybe the answers will come, but the questions are deep enough to keep us focused and keep us looking. The Buddha, in the Buddha's time, his main assistant, Ananda, at one point approached him and said, you know, Sangha and the spiritual community is sort of half of the spiritual life, isn't it? And the Buddha immediately corrected Ananda and said, no, Ananda. The whole of the spiritual life is the Sangha, the community. There's a concept in Buddhism called Kalyana Mitata, which is spiritual friendship, which is what the Buddha was talking about. This connection, this spiritual friendship between people, because the spiritual path is not easy. It's difficult, and that support that people give each other in a friendly, loving way helps each of us. So there's a couple levels of that in Buddhism, of this Kalyana Mitata. There, of course, is the vertical level of spiritual friendship between a teacher and a student. Someone more along, more advanced on the spiritual path and the student. But that's not really what we're talking about today, because there's that horizontal spiritual friendship that is what we have and what we're talking about between peers and comrades. I mean, that's what the Buddha said with other people in spiritual friendship, other admirable people. As friends, companions, and comrades, we can develop and pursue his path, his Eightfold Path. And it's really important to note, too, that the three gems of Buddhism, the three treasures, the three, you know, basic places of refuge are the Buddha, which is really our Buddha nature, ourselves, and within ourselves, the Dharma, the teachings, and the Sangha. I mean, it's one of the three foundational aspects of Buddhism. And so, here we are. I mean, we're a lay group, not a monastic Sangha, here in you know, the 21st century of gay men. And what is it that brings us here? Week after week, or I mean, there were a few people that raised their hands that this is the first time they've come. I would be curious if they'd be willing to share at some time. What is it that drew them here? And then the other question is, what is it that draws me here and that draws each of us here every Sunday? I mean, it takes effort to come, whether we come from a few blocks away or the East Bay or wherever, to give up our Sunday morning and get out of the comfort of our warm house and our coffee and newspaper to come here and sit silently together for a half hour. And something is drawing us together, and what is it? That's a big question. I mean, for me personally, I've probably been coming here for about 10 years, I'd say. We are so blessed, like Clint said, to be in the Bay Area with all the various spiritual traditions, and especially Buddhism. And we in the gay community are amazingly blessed to be here, because not only do we have the Gay Buddhist Fellowship, which is now a really important group, I think, in the Bay Area, and large. I mean, sometimes when we have a famous speaker like we did last week, we had Sylvia Borstein, or other times we have pretty famous Buddhist teachers, this room is packed filled. There could be, you know, 60, 70 people here. You can't get a seat. And even on a regular Sunday when it's just us guys, here we are, have a big group of people that are coming. So this is just one. At 3 o'clock this afternoon, the Gay Men's Buddhist Sangha meets at the Hartford Street Zen Center from 3 to 5. Same format as ours. Silent meditation for a half hour, and then a talk by a speaker or a discussion. Tomorrow at 5:30 at the San Francisco Lesbian Gay Center is a weekly meditation group. I go to that. I've been going that since it started about 5.5 years ago. From 5:30 to 6:30, half hour of silent meditation. That group, as opposed to the two I just mentioned, ours and the Gay Men's Buddhist Sangha, is a mixed group in the sense that it's gay men, lesbians, bisexuals, transgender people. On Wednesday, the East Bay Meditation Center has a very large, now, LGBT sitting group. I mean, we have private little groups as well, little offshoots. Like on Tuesday night at Darren's house, there's a Darren, I don't think, is here today, a meta sitting group. And there are book reading groups of gay men on Buddhism. So obviously there's some need, some draw to gay people sitting together, meditating, and learning the teachings and living the path. But what's also interesting to me about GBF is that what we're not, and we are not any one specific Buddhist tradition, that's for sure. We come, we sit, we do whatever we do internally inside ourselves for this half hour. And it may not even be Buddhist necessarily, internally. I mean, that's the framework, the Buddhist teachings. But some of us may be doing Vipassana or through the Theravadan tradition. Some of us trained in Zen. Some of us doing visualization. Some of us doing mantra. Some of us just sitting in silence. So we're not something that is denominated, something that is, this is what we do and here's how we do it. We just sit in silence. So that's interesting to me in that we're not going to do Zen meditation. We're not doing, here we are. We're open in that regard. What we also are not is a group that's open to the whole gay community. The invitation is gay men. Why is that? Is a question that was raised when Clint and I spoke. Why not bisexuals? Why not women, gay women? Why not LGBT? No answer from us on that. I think it's a interesting and legitimate question for us to consider. What is it that we get out of this, of having us as gay men together in a spiritual community? A question that I thought of too when I was thinking about this is, our invitation is just for gay men. I mean, it's not a membership organization. People come and go, and you don't have to sign up. But our speakers aren't necessarily gay. And as a matter of fact, most of them are not gay, the big name speakers. Well, why is that? If we're a gay spiritual community of gay men, why are not we seeking to have the teachings delivered to us by other gay people? And we open it up to everyone to speak to us and give the teachings. So when we open this up for discussion, I think we would like to hear from people as to what it is, what needs are being met by being in this gay men's spiritual community of GBF. Are they only spiritual? Is it a social need why people come to interact and have and be with other gay men and be able to talk afterwards? What is it that we really get out of this? Because we have different levels for all of us of our practice, of our knowledge perhaps and study of Buddhism, and does that matter at all? One of the questions that Clint and I raise, and I think is raised in this group often, is do we want to deepen our practice of Buddhism as well? And if we do, how do we do that? I mean, we're lucky in the GBF. We do have other things besides our Sangha on Sunday for people who want to get more involved in practice. Besides the metta group, we have the service, which is a big part of Buddhism. For years, we and Clint was a leader of this at the Hamilton House for the homeless. We did it a weekly or a monthly meal. Now we have a couple of groups from GBF who volunteer and give meals at the Larkin Street Youth Center. We have our prison outreach program. We've got our microloan program. We have service programs going on. Many of us may not even be aware of them, and certainly a lot of us don't take part in them. But do we want to deepen that, you know, deepen our study of the Buddhist teachings? Or is it okay just to sit here for a half hour and then go about our own lives and do whatever we do on our own? One of the other things that we have is once a year we have an annual retreat where we come together for two nights down at the Vajrapani Institute. I've attended that one year. Those are amazing experiences. One of the things for me in my practice, when I first really started to get involved in Buddhism, I attended the Spirit Rock five-night silent retreats. Quite a few of us have been there over the years. LGBT silent retreats. These are led by experienced gay and lesbian teachers. It was started by Eric Kolvig, who used to come here to GBF when he was in the Bay Area. One of the few in the entire world who is an openly gay male, very experienced Buddhist teacher. And Irina Weissman, a lesbian, also a practitioner of many, many years, an author of books, open lesbian. It was Eric and Irina who began, probably about 15 years ago as well, these annual five-night silent meditation retreats at Spirit Rock for LGBT people. And I really started by getting involved with that Sangha as far as deepening my practice, and I've probably been to about six or seven of those over the years. And so I think it's something that, for me, I mean, I don't want to sort of answer it for everybody, and I'd like to make it part of our discussion, but I know for me, gay Sangha is important. Even though, you know, the spiritual path and Buddhism, it's universal. I mean, we're supposed to be non-discriminatory. What difference does it make if it's gay people you're sitting with? Your heart is supposed to be open to everyone. Well, why do we need to discriminate? Why do we need such an insular group? Isn't it limiting? Isn't it like we have our little gay spiritual ghetto? What? For me, I know it has been a place of safety. You know, as a gay man, just feeling the comfort of knowing I can be myself among gay people who have a similar goal or mindset of deepening their own spiritual practice and not having to fear about judgments or opening up if things come up for me, you know. And so that is a big part of why a gay Sangha for me. We have our own, you know, each of us have our own life stories, but I believe there is sort of like a gay sensibility that exists because of the homophobic world we live in and the straight world that we live in. And each of us have our own life experiences. We've heard so many of them in our Dharma duos, and we know it. in our hearts and just from our own experiences, that being gay in this world is different, and it takes a little more of a struggle internally and externally to come out and to deal with all the stuff that's thrown on us. And so when we go within, as we do in this practice, a lot of that stuff comes up. And for it to be addressed and to be able to feel free enough to express it and really deal with it, the safety of knowing I'm among gay people helps me. And so that's, for me, one of the purposes and one of the things that I get from really having, you know, a gay sangha. It's that mutual support. And the other thing, and I think I'll close with this as far as my opening remarks, is that think about the Buddha. He was quite amazing. I mean, after he became enlightened, after his, you know, struggle under the Bodhi tree and he reached that place of being awake and understood the nature of reality, he struggled whether or not he would even teach. At first he didn't want to. It would be too hard for people to understand, he thought, you know, and he just wouldn't be able to do it. It was so deep. But, you know, in the cosmology, visions came to him, and he made the decision that he would do it. He would go and teach. And for 45 years after he was enlightened, he wandered, and the Sangha developed around him, and he taught. But one of the beauties of Buddhism and the Buddha himself was he was able to teach because he could relate to people on their level, whether it was a king or royalty or someone of poverty and lesser intelligence. The Buddha was able to frame the Dharma, the teachings, in a way to make people understand in their own language and in their own level. And the stories are legion in all the sutras and all the traditional wisdom stories of how the Buddha was able to frame the Dharma so it could be understandable to people. And I think that's one of the aspects that gay sangha provides, is that we can understand where we are inside of ourselves. And so when we hear the Dharma, or when someone, you know, teaches the Dharma, or we read it, it's through our own filters of our own experiences as gay men, as gay people, that helps us understand it. And that understanding, I think, is more accessible in a gay sangha, because we don't have that same sensibility, and the life stories, which is how the teachings really hit home. I mean, I don't know how many of us were here last week when Sylvia was here. Just, you know, she didn't really talk about the XYZ lists of Buddhism. She told us stories of her life, of what, and it's those kinds of stories that give us the teachings in real reality that we can understand. And I think when we have gay teachers, or even ourselves, because I truly believe that we're students and teachers to each other, and just the conditions may change and shift, but we are students and teachers to each other, and with the same understandings and life experiences and sensibility, we can convey these teachings and understand them better in our own community. But it shouldn't. I also think that, you know, it shouldn't limit us, and that's sometimes a concern, that I become, you know, limited and insular in my gay community, and because I can do it here in the Bay Area. But, you know, we see some of the emails that we get from people around the country on the GBF listserv that, you know, they have to drive 100 miles and maybe they'll be at a place and there'll be three people at a monthly meditation sit. So we have that luxury, but I fear sometimes that it can be limiting, but it's just a question that's raised. So anyway, so these are the issues that we deal with, and Clint and I would like to sort of just ask others what they think, why they come, what support they get by coming here. Are your needs being met? Should things be different?
Great. So we have half an hour, so we're going to resolve the whole issue.
I'll go first. Thank you, Clint, and thank you, Carl, for very interesting questions that you've raised. I've been coming here since 1996, so it'll be 12 years in June. And I think that the reason that I keep coming back is because of the program. And it's a number of things. I was raised as a Christian, so Sunday morning was the time to do something spiritual. And I find that I can't get that out of my bones. And so, you know, I've looked for other things to do Sunday morning, and this is by far the best one. So that's part of it. But also, I think the program is really good. If you know, 12 years ago, I was pretty new to Buddhism, and I'd been meditating a few years, but half an hour was a bit of a challenge. At this point, it's easy. So I feel like, as you were talking, I had the image and the thought of a bridge, that this Sangha serves as a bridge for many things. For those of us who are newer to Buddhism, it serves as a bridge to deepening it. For those of us who need friends, different perspectives, it's really helpful. A lot of I've gone a lot to the Zen Center, and there are a lot of wonderful things about it, but it's not a warm, fuzzy place. People avoid eye contact, they don't introduce themselves. So one of the things I come here for is to be able to talk with people about, you know, how are you deepening your practice, what have you learned? And then I think having, it's felt to me like a wonderfully rich spiritual cafeteria, thanks to the work that Clint and people like you have done in the programs committee, where we do have Dharma speakers from a variety of perspectives, and you can say, okay, well, I want to learn more about Tibetan Buddhism, Thai Buddhism interests me or not, and, you know, the Zen tradition is helpful or not. So I found that all really, really helpful. I love women. I love gay women, straight women, and I'm a little troubled that we are just gay men, but I also think it's nice. It's safe. There's a comfort to it and an understanding of the ways in which we've been, the struggles we've had in coming out, many of us, most of us. And I think that the other perspective that I would have is I've seen the interest in and success of the Sangha wax and wane over those 12 years. I was on the steering committee for the first few years, and there was a time when we were struggling a bit. I think we're down to like 10 or 12 people a week. And now every time I come, there are 30, 40, 50. So I think that what we're doing is working. And I think that we shouldn't, you know, we should be very careful about making anything but subtle changes. So I think what we're doing is working, and I think it's people can come for what they want and, you know, do things or not. So I will say one other thing that we did in the steering committee back in, I think, 98 is instead of having big discussions like this, we thought that was one thing that drove people away. We always broke up into small groups, and we've been doing that for about 8 years. I think that's successful because a lot of people are a little frightened of speaking in front of such a large group. So, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. First of all, thanks for the talk. God, it would have been nice if I'd heard that talk like 10 years ago. Because you really did sum it up. I mean, just kind of all the different areas, a lot of things that I had questions about when I first came in, started sitting. That kind of, the way you kind of introduced, like, it was like 101, you know, GBF 101 is really kind of how I heard your talk. And I think it'd be good, actually, to do that for newcomers in the future, maybe have some kind of prep material to say, okay, this is what we do, this is how we structure things, kind of something that gives a better sense of what it is. Because I was coming here for a long time before I really started to get the gist of it. Mm-hmm. It was really helpful. I didn't even know sometimes what questions to ask. So thank you for that. And I'd also like to say, I think it seems that we're doing things really well. You know, I've seen improvement. I've seen there's something really tight now that's happening. It's really clean and tight. Like, it's the structure, it seems very organized. It seems like we have consistent speakers. It seems like there's always kind of, as a group, it seems to know what it's doing. And there's a sense of security, I find, in that. There's a vitality now that wasn't here, I think, 5 or 6 years ago when I was coming, and I'm really encouraged by that, and it keeps me interested. The reason I think I come and I started in Buddhism was that, and I like being around other gay men and gay women too, that I came out of, you know, religious traditions, of course, that in many respects rejected me, and so my reaction to religion has been, you know, pretty visceral for the most part. And the problem is that I kind of threw the baby out with the bathwater for many years. So I threw morality out with a lot of other stuff, and I just thought, oh, you know, it's just a bunch of hypocritical crap, and was able to justify all kinds of behavior that now I'm kind of putting behind me. But I think a lot of other gay men are coming from that place. And what I like about Buddhism is that it says, it has the precepts and the structures, but in the precepts what I hear is that, look, you know, if you engage in harmful speech, you're going to suffer. It's not, oh, you should or shouldn't do it. It's not right or wrong. It's just that you're going to suffer. It's very simple, and it's not about this kind of right and wrong morality. And so as a gay person, it's a good fit. And I think a lot of other gay folks that I talk to have that same feeling. And it's kind of like that. There's something in that experience that I feel is very unique about for a lot of gay folks. And then and the issue about diversity, I think that there are so many sanghas in this city, and so much, we have the luxury of being able to do this. And and I tend to be somebody who kind of takes things as they are, you know, when I come into them. So yeah, sure, you know, women would be okay, but it seems cool that it's a men's group, and I expect there's probably some difference in good and in bad way to that. So for me, that's kind of not really much of a controversy, because I have so much to choose from in terms of going to other songs.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to say thank you for bringing this topic up. My head is so full of a lot of ideas I won't be able to say everything that's thinking. But what I want to say is, you know, I feel like for me, I enjoy coming to this group because I feel like the men in this group, we share a common background of common suffering. We have experienced what it's like to be outsiders, or to feel like I can't be myself. In high school and in college, I never felt like I really had peers in my own psychological mind, because most of the other guys were straight, and I just felt like I didn't belong and I was outside. But when I come to a group like this, I feel like, you know, we do have some common background, and I do feel like I belong, and that's a big plus for me. Feeling like I'm not, you know, an outsider, and that is what I get from coming to this group. I also want to say that I've only been coming to this group for about 3 years, but I really feel like I've, you know, melted right into it pretty quickly. I've also been a member of a 12-step group for about 20 years, and I see a lot of parallels with the 12-step attitude of, you know, sharing common stories. That's how we learn from each other, how to bring the practice into our daily lives, into our interactions with other people, with our families, with our employers and employees and co-workers, and how do we really live is really what I think it's about. And I'll also say about the 12-step program that, you know, there are gay men's groups, there are gay women's groups. My experience is that I prefer to go to the gay men's groups because I feel like, you know, I belong. I can talk about boyfriend issues or, you know, sexual things, or, and I'm not going to, you know, turn somebody off or offend somebody or cause some controversy. But my experience has been that the gay men's groups are usually open to women, and there are always a couple of women that come. There are also gay women's groups that are not open to men. And I heard Carol Newhouse say in this side of this meeting here that there's a gay women's Buddhist city group in the East Bay that's not open to having visitors from the Sangha come over there. And I think that's fine. I really think it's fine. I think it's good that there should be a place where women can go and be by themselves and not feel like, you know, they have to have men. I also feel it should be a possibility for men that we should have a place to go where, you know, we don't have to have, we don't feel like we have to have women there. What's wrong with that? I think it's a good thing. And the other thing I'll just end up saying is that, you know, you mentioned something about, you know, do we, well, I'll say it another way. Buddhism is working on myself and then working within a sangha. And then this gay men's sangha is feels closer to myself than a larger sangha that includes all kinds of people, gay, straight, bisexual, lesbian. So this could be like an interim for me to go from, you know, my inner self to this group to a larger Buddhist teaching group. And it's like a step. You know, I can't just be all by myself all the time. I can't just be out in the world all the time. But, you know, this is a nice little transition. So.
That's right. Yes. Peter?
Thank you for the talk. Someone else said it's very interesting to kind of all the issues lumped into one. And I also think, you know, it's a discussion that could go on for hours. So, but to try and sum things up briefly, I think there are a number of issues that this sangha handles very well. The first issue I would say is, for me, what I call the Goldilocks issue. I've been to a lot of different sanghas, and they all have sort of different approaches. And, you know, some are too hot, and some are too cold, and some are too severe, and some are too political, some are too abstract, and some are too concrete. Some have people with too thick accents, and some have, you know, there are all kinds of different things that go on. And somehow this one, for me, is just right. I began meditating at the Zen Center, and I have a great deal of respect for the people at the Zen Center. I admire them, and I trust them, and I love when they come here to teach. But I found their approach just a little too strict for me. And what I like about being here is, for the people who are new, it's a very good place to come and get an overview of Buddhism, because we are sort of ecumenical in the Buddhist realm, and we have all these different teachers, so a beginner can get a very good overview and perhaps decide to go someplace else to strengthen their practice. But those of us who have had a stronger practice can also come here to fill in the gaps that those practice groups perhaps don't meet. And a lot of the more organized practice groups are more monastic in their tradition, are more austere and more severe. And so to have a sense of community and to have particularly a situation where my gayness can be more evident, I think is very valuable to me. And, you know, to bring back what you said earlier, Carl, about the Buddha saying that Sangha was all spiritual practice, I think that's true. No matter how sophisticated I think my Zen meditation or my knowledge of the sutras or other things are, to come here and put it into practice with other people, to actually rub elbows with other people, and we do some pretty vigorous elbow rubbing here sometimes over issues, that's also a great challenge, and it's really another way of seeing the Dharma and the spiritual practice. It's not all just about reading things in books or following a teacher. The second problem that I think this sangha helps to solve is what I call the rent-a-car problem. We have people in the city who are, you know, pedestrians who don't own a car, don't want to own a car, don't drive a car. And we have people who own cars and drive them all the time and are considered drivers. We have a lot of people in the city, though, who are like me, who don't own a car, but have a driver's license and occasionally rent one in order to go somewhere. So when I'm in a car and I'm driving, I have an identity as a driver. And I can get into the same kinds of accidents that drivers get into. I can get the same kinds of parking tickets that drivers get. But I'm not really a driver all the time. It's an identity that I put on and take off. I think for us as gay men, that question of putting on an identity and taking it off is very, very crucial. Much more crucial than it is for most straight people. Because we are asked in our lives over and over again to make that choice. You know, do I come out in this environment? How far do I come out? What does it mean to come out? When I fill out my IRS tax form, it doesn't ask me if I'm gay or straight. It asks me if I'm male or female. It doesn't ask me if I'm gay or straight. So in the Buddhist tradition, identity is a very, very deep and important issue. And the, you know, different Buddhist traditions will often say that identity is a trap. To say that this is who I am, and I know who I am, and I have to hold on to this identity is going to really cause me a problem. But to have no identity and say, I'll be whatever anybody wants me to be, I have no, you know, experience that sets me apart, is also a trap. So I think one of the reasons we come here as gay men and we've made it a gay Buddhist sangha and we call it that and we don't make an invitation to the whole world is to look at precisely that issue. Because we have to look at it from both directions at the same time. We have to find a way of being gay that's not spiritually crippling, that is not reinforcing attachment, that is not destroying the very basics of the Buddhist teaching about not being too lost in identity. At the same time, we have to respect what all of us have suffered as gay men in this society and the experience that has marked us as different from the mainstream. And so we go back and forth with that. You know, this sangha itself meets in a rented place. You know, it's another rent-a-car issue. People see gay Buddhist sangha on the web and they think we're you know, an independent gay church they can come to and get teachings from and help from and services from. But we're not, we rent this building from another sangha. You know, so when we come here for an hour and a half on Sunday morning, we are the gay Buddhist sangha. When the meeting ends and we walk out there, there is no gay Buddhist sangha, you know, for another week. This is like Brigadoon. It happens once each cycle and then it disappears. And it's magical when it's here, but it goes. So I think that's an issue that we really have to pay a lot of attention to. And I think because we have a lot of people who come in and out of the group who have a lot of political interests, that often gets mired in politics, I think, in the idea that we should have a larger purpose and we can reach out to the larger society and we can be involved in larger issues. And I think, you know, it's just like the rent-a-car problem. Yes, we can, in spurts, in for short periods of time, in discrete ways, but we are not the American Buddhist Church. We are not, God forbid, the American Catholic Church. You know, we are a rental group.
Thanks, Peter. Larry.
I'm Larry. I guess I just have a bit of a ramble. I really like being here. I obviously like it enough that I keep coming back. I like what I learn here, and I like that it's the company of gay men. I really love the fact that it's a rental hall. I don't understand why religions need to build enormous edifices all the time. I like the idea of just meeting and being in space. So that feels great. I also just love the fact that we have no set teacher that I could get pissed off at, and I can get different feelings around them as they go through each week and learn from them. I have a really strong sense of ambivalence personally to my relationship to Buddhism. I come from Jewish background that at the beginning of my life was not all that religious, and then my mom remarried and we became a kosher household and did all kinds of stuff related to Judaism. And I just can't bring myself to go to Shor HaZahav. It doesn't meet my philosophic beliefs, and I'm just really grateful for the things that I hear here and the philosophies that I learn about living through at least the stripped down Buddhism that seems to come to us in America, California. I don't really know if I was in Burma or Thailand or something, whether I could stand what they were doing there. but at least my own background and what we do in Jewish temples, there's so many things that I just don't believe that makes it difficult. And here, I like the concept, kind of like take what you like and leave the rest, and only believe something if it works for you. That's like one of the most amazing concepts in Buddhism. It's like, here's suggestions, try it. If you do it this way, maybe it'll work better for you in your life. If not, do something else. So the whole reason for me being here is the Buddhist concepts that I'm really liking, but it's a heck of a lot of fun being around a lot of gay men, and it pushes my buttons greatly. Sometimes at the end, I just feel like I want to say hi to everybody and be real social and whatever, and other times I feel real shy and just want to run out the door, which I do. So it's just, the whole place is just a big mix. If somebody asked me, am I a Buddhist? Blah. I don't know that I could say that I am. It just feels so wacky to say that. I frame it that I go to the Gay Buddhist Fellowship on Sundays. That's kind of how I put it. I just have so much difficulty giving up a Jewish identity, even though I don't want to go to the services or necessarily believe the things that I was brought up with. But so I have a bit of a mix. I'm sorry for the ramble, and I wonder, I would be interested in when we divide into small groups at times, that maybe we could, being that we're all kind of refugee travelers, that we might divide sometimes into the group of our family of origin religion and have a bit of a discussion, so there'd be a little Catholic group and a little Protestant group and a little Jewish group and whatever. I find that very curious to see what kind of conversations we might have. Thank you much.
Jeff,
I find it just so wonderfully safe to enjoy to be here and to come back to San Francisco, where I know I can come to a group of men who are by far the most intelligent men I've ever met or hope to be with in my life. And just the beauty index is wonderful. And that's not only the aura of male beauty, whatever that is, but it's physical beauty too. We tend to take good care of ourselves, but even that, it's just the quality of beauty and intelligence is off the scale as far as I'm concerned, and I was never permitted to do that as a child. I don't think the culture at large permits men to do that very well, but here I feel free to feel that about myself and about all the men here to whatever extent I can. It's wonderful. I don't know anything else about it in the universe.
I agree with Herb. I think, you know, I mean, I have no sense of needing to be apologetic that this is a male joke. None of us are. And to me, gayness is a mystery, and I learn about gayness from looking around, you know. And I'm gay because I love male energy. And there's a lot of beautiful male energy here. Very masculine. I'm with Larry. I have many discomforts with Buddhism, but it's basic psychological take that we need to go inward to find out what life is about, I think is ultimately so true. And like just this morning, during the meditation, that was sublime, the quiet, the peace, the depth. It's hard to meditate. It's hard to come up with that inward focus on your own, and we help each other. We sort of ride in each other's wake when we meditate together. I think it's a great thing. You know, Sangha as teacher, we teach each other how to be inward and be at peace with ourselves. But also, I think that it helps us step out of our storyline of persecution and suffering from what, and all the details. We go to the deep water where none of that is, we take a break from the story and all the grief from the story. And so I think there's profound healing in that, and I'm very grateful. We are extremely fortunate. Thank you, guys.
With that, could I just draw to gentlemen to your attention to the arc and Alice? You want to take one more question?
Jim.
Yeah, I just want to follow up on that. I come here
predominantly because the meditations are so profound. And as you were talking, I was able to, I've lived in India, I meditate at ashrams, and I come here, and I never have a meditation like when I come here. And I think it's so deep, in part because the gay male issue is a non-issue here, so it allows me to drop into a place that is beyond male and gay. Whereas I think in another setting, I'm feeling other. Or maybe it's just that there's a high, I've been sitting here, is it a higher vibration of people? I mean, I don't want that superior. Being Jewish, you know, you're raised to think you're the chosen. So, thank you.
Any closing comments?
Well, thank you. No, I just really enjoy being here. I think you guys are my family, and you've been this way for all these years, and this is a very important group for me. Thank you.
Yes, I feel the same.
Okay, do we have any announcements today? Announcements? We have a host. Okay.
Yes, next week our speaker is going to be Lee Lip. Background, she gave a nation with Thich Nhat Hanh, has been a member of the Order of Interbeing. She's practiced this Vipassana, and so has that for several years. She is the outreach coordinator for the Zen Center and on the board of the Buddhist Peace Fellowship.
Sounds great. And our host? Yes.
There's some treats. There's tea. If you do use glasses or cups, could you please rinse them out? And there's also a diamond bowl, and typically remember the sign that goes around and hopes to collect the generosity into the bowl. I guess I could do that if nobody wants to hear it.
Yes. Other announcements?
Yes, I'm updating the directory, and I'd like to get a new one out soon. So this is a corrections copy that you can look over. If there's any changes in addresses or email addresses or misspellings, please change them on this. If you're not on this at all and you would like to be, please sign up on the pink sheet, which is right next to the Dhamma bowl, and I'll leave this next to the Dhamma bowl. And if you want to be on this directory, write the word yes on the pink sheet that says, do you want to be on the GDFP?
Okay, if there are no other announcements, we'll gather in a circle for our closing session.
By the power and truth of this practice, may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all be free from sorrow and the causes of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness that is without sorrow. And may all live in equanimity, without too much attachment or too much aversion, and live believing in the equality of all that lives.
Thank you for listening to the Gay Buddhist Forum. If you would like to hear several new talks per month and be notified of upcoming speakers so you can participate live, please subscribe to this podcast, like us on Facebook, and join our mailing list by visiting gaybuddhist.org.